All right, so we just make a left up here at this side street in Greenfield.
Wow, there it is, just ahead.
This is such a picturesque covered bridge. I love it. It's only one of the most iconic in Western Massachusetts. Did you know that?
I did, and it's also the most haunted.
So what do we do now that we're stopped by this bridge, Jeff?
We listen.
Okay, for what?
That. Hello, I'm Jeff Belanger, and welcome to episode 82 of the New England Legends podcast. If you give us about 10 minutes, we'll give you something strange to talk about today.
And I'm Ray Osier. We're on a mission to chronicle every New England legend 1 week and one story at a time. Our episode this week is brought to you by our Patreon patrons who help us with our hosting costs, production costs, and everything else we do.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you. If you'd like to become a patron and get early access to new episodes, plus bonus episodes and content that no one else gets to hear, head on over to patreon.com/New England Legends. And for as little as $3 a month, you can become a bigger part of this legendary movement.
We appreciate all of you listening to us each week and spending a few minutes with us.
We sure do.
And we love it when you get involved. We love hearing from you, whether you join our super secret Facebook group or call or text our legend line anytime at 617-444-9683. Please do keep in touch.
All right, Jeff. So this covered bridge over the Green River in Greenfield, Massachusetts, it's haunted?
That's what they say. This is the tragic story of Eunice Williams.
All right, the year is 1704. We're in the middle of Queen Anne's War. The French have established themselves north in what will become Canada.
Okay.
And of course, this region of Massachusetts is a British colony.
Right.
France and England are fighting for control of the continent, and the indigenous people are choosing sides.
And you have to remember, the King Philip's War ended just 26 years ago, so the memory of having every treaty and agreement broken by the British is still pretty fresh in the minds of the Native Americans.
And I'm sure that made choosing sides a little, little easier.
Yeah, that it did. So all of the northern colonies are on high alert. Wars are no longer fought like they were in Europe, with civilized soldiers facing each other in lines in a wide open field, firing at one another until, you know, one side gives up because too many are dead.
Sure. Civilized, right?
Right. In this strange new world, guerrilla warfare is on the rise, with soldiers and spies picking off enemy soldiers and civilians whenever the opportunity presents itself. So it's February of 1704. The town of Deerfield, Massachusetts, like many other communities in Massachusetts, are on high alert for attack. They've built a stockade fence near the center of town with hired soldiers inside to keep watch. And scouts regularly patrol the woods nearby, looking for any sign of attack. Now, the town minister, Reverend John Williams, keeps a vigil in church. He orders a day of fasting and prayer because he's had this horrible vision of his town being destroyed. The reverend is more in tune with prophecy than anyone realizes at the time.
All right, picture this.
Okay.
It's now February 29th, 1704. In the cold pre-dawn hours of the day, everything is dark and still in Deerfield when 300 warriors from the French army, along with their Mohawk and Abenaki allies, sneak into Deerfield undetected as the townsfolk sleep. The soldiers are in place. Everything in Deerfield is quiet. Dead quiet. And then these enemy soldiers know Deerfield well. Their first destination is Reverend Williams' house. They know if he can be subdued, the town will soon follow. A group of Indians storm his house. Williams later wrote about the attack.
The enemy came in like a flood upon us. They came to my house in the beginning of the onset, and by their violent endeavors to break open doors and windows with axes and hatchets, awakened me out of sleep, on which I leaped out of bed, and running towards the door, perceived the enemy making their entrance into the house. I judged to be the number of 20, with painted faces and hideous acclamations.
While this is happening, fire is set to other houses. The Deerfield soldiers standing watch by the stockade in town are completely overpowered and taken down.
I cannot relate the distressing care I had for my dear wife, who had lain in but a few weeks before, and for my poor children, family, and Christian neighbors. The enemy fell to rifling the house and entered in great numbers into every room. I begged of God to remember mercy in the midst of judgment, as to prevent their murdering of us, that we might have grace to glorify his name, whether in life or death, and as I was able, committed our state to God.
In the attack, the intruders kill Reverend Williams' six-week-old daughter, Jerusha.
Oh, my God.
Their six-year-old son, John.
Ugh.
And their slave woman, Parthena.
The French burn and plunder the town. Livestock are killed, as are 56 residents of Deerfield.
Ugh.
The folks in town don't know what hit them. By morning, 112 Deerfield residents are taken captive. They're informed they'll spend the next few months marching 300 miles north to New France, where their fate will be decided.
I can only imagine what's going through the minds and hearts of everyone left in Deerfield.
Right.
So many friends, family, and neighbors had just been slaughtered in an event that would become known as the Deerfield Massacre. And now you're a prisoner of war walking into a strange land. There's elderly people, children, women, and men all walking north in a daze.
So Reverend John Williams and his wife Eunice, along with their five surviving children, ages 4 to 14, are among those 112 from Deerfield marching north. It's the following day, March 1st, when they reach Greenfield, Massachusetts, which is the next town north of Deerfield.
What the prisoners don't know is that the French have given orders that any stragglers be executed so as not to slow them down.
It's the first full day of marching when a large group reaches the Green River in Greenfield. They'll need to cross. Keep in mind, it's March 1st. It's still very much winter in this region, and the river, though shallow, is ice cold. As the prisoners trudge across, the freezing water cuts like razors against their feet and legs. Remember that Eunice Williams had just given birth 6 weeks ago, and her two youngest children had been cut down the day before. She is in no shape to make this arduous journey. There, on the banks of the Green River, Eunice Williams collapses from exhaustion. The Native American captors waste no time. One soldier approaches Eunice, raises his tomahawk in the air, and Eunice Williams is cut down just a few feet from her surviving children.
The rest of the Williams family have no choice but to keep walking with their captors. There's no time to stop, no time to mourn. They keep marching day after day to New France as the body of Eunice Williams is left to rot on the bank of the Green River.
It's awful.
Once they get up north to the land of their captors, the strangest thing happens. 7-year-old Eunice Williams, who was named after her mother, is adopted by a local group of Indians to replace a daughter they lost to smallpox.
Huh.
By the time Queen Anne's War ends, years later, it's time for the prisoners to go home. But Eunice doesn't want to leave. Her siblings beg her to come home to Deerfield. Her father does the same, but she stays. She goes on to change her name and marry an Indian man. She never leaves Canada again.
But back in Deerfield, Reverend Williams will never forget what happened to his youngest children and dear wife. And neither will the community. A marker is placed where Eunice Williams lost her life by the bank of the Green River. Across the top of the stone, read the angry words of Reverend John Williams.
The cruel and bloodthirsty savage who took her, slew her with his hatchet of one stroke.
More than a century later, around the 1870s, a covered bridge was built in this spot spanning the Green River. It was called Pumping Station Covered Bridge, but the locals know it as Eunice Williams Covered Bridge because of what took place here.
Makes sense.
And that brings us back to modern day.
In 1930, an historic marker was placed at this spot by the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, right next to Eunice Williams Covered Bridge, which now has a haunted reputation. Go ahead and give this sign a read, Ray.
All right. It says 1630, then 1930, Eunice Williams, wife of the Reverend John Williams, quote, the redeemed captive, was killed at this place on March 1st, 1704, during the Deerfield Massacre.
This sign is here to remind us all of what happened at Green River. This sign no doubt plays a role in the haunting. The covered bridge has never seen all that much traffic. It's tucked away in a place where a woman was murdered during a tragic time in the history of Massachusetts.
And then the locals report seeing a ghost.
Ah.
They report hearing disembodied screams coming from this region of the bridge. And the reputation grows.
Now it's Halloween night, 1969. Sometime in the late hours of the evening, someone torches this historic covered bridge. In the span of just a few hours, the bridge is completely destroyed.
The police investigate, and they rule it's arson. They're quick to point out this seems to be much bigger than some Halloween prank that went wrong. This was deliberate.
And we're left to speculate if the haunting had something to do with the fire. Even if some local was tired of kids coming out there at all hours and figured that destroying the bridge would end the haunting, which, of course, it would not,
right.
It only adds a new layer. In 1972, the bridge is rebuilt, and that's the bridge we see in front of us today. And they claim, especially on moonless nights, that the ghost of Eunice Williams will make herself known, either by appearing on the bridge or through a disembodied scream.
This haunted bridge allows us to connect to a tragedy and to a family that lived during a time when Massachusetts was still forming. Even 3 centuries after the fact, this massacre and murder still haunts us.
Do you notice how easy it is to villainize the Native Americans and French for these brutal acts?
Well, they were brutal acts.
I agree, but colonists made some of their own atrocities against the Native Americans.
True.
But because history is told by the winners, those folks don't have covered bridges named after them.
No, they don't. Well, if you enjoy these stories, be sure to subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, or wherever you get your podcasts. We don't want you to miss a thing.
Also, please consider telling a friend or two about our show or posting a review on iTunes. Those things go a long way in helping others find us.
They sure do.
We'd like to thank Michael Leggi for lending his voice acting talents this week, and our theme music is by John Judd.
Until next time, remember, the bizarre is closer than you think.